Dato, can you hear us?
Hello. Yes, I can hear you.
Great. Okay, so I let you know when it's time to start. We're probably going to be starting in the next 2 minutes.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And then can I check something? Are there going to be any newcomers in the meeting?
There are newcomers in the meeting, and they will be more of them will be joining soon, hopefully.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you everyone for joining us today. We're going to be starting the meeting now. The recording can start. So right now we're going to be discussing more administrative issues. And we will start firstly with the Financial Committee, represented by Tatum Fikwe, and then Aidan Ferdelaine will be continuing with the budget and operation plan for FY19. And then Farrell Foley will be discussing the Policy Committee actions for this year and what they're up to. After that, Renata will make a small input about the EC and her position as a chair and about what NCUC's plans are going forward. We'll have small updates by some EC members who will be here. And then thank you for joining us, Farzi, now, and hopefully soon Tatiana will be joining us so that they could be presenting some issues like jurisdiction and domain abuse as focal points. My name is Elsa Saade. I'm the NCUC AP representative in the ExCom, and I'll be happy to be chairing this session alongside my colleague Bruna Santos, the ExCom on LAC. So we will be starting without further ado with Tato. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, the floor is yours. Please be brief. We have 10 minutes.
Okay, thanks very much. And hi, everyone. My name is Tatum Fikwe from South Africa, and I'm the recently appointed financial executive for the non-commercial stakeholder group. So my presentation, I'll just be taking you through my background in terms of where I'm coming from with ICANN and also talking briefly about the financial committee itself. Just to give it a little background, I actually started participating within ICANN during ICANN 57. And although being my first meeting, I experienced a little bit of challenges in terms of understanding how ICANN could easily work it. And then I had some issues also with the PDP processes of ICANN, but I used to attend online calls to actually try and gain better understanding of what is happening with the NCUC and non-commercial stakeholder group. So the working groups and online meetings, I just volunteered into the Internet Governance Working Committee and participated in the NCUC outreach that was held in Johannesburg back in 2015, which gave me better understanding in terms of what is involved in NCUC, NCSG, and ICANN as a whole. So just going straight to the non-commercial stakeholder group finance committee, and looking at how it's constituted and what is its role. Basically, according to the NCSG Charter, the Finance Committee is constituted to establish a firm position for NCSG and for administration of NCSG funds within the framework that meets the legal requirements imposed by ICANN. So our responsibilities include, amongst other things, fundraising, setting voluntary contribution levels by member organizations, and also determining procedures for distribution of funds and the monitor, amongst other things. So as the Finance Committee, we work closely with the ICANN staff and finance staff to determine support levels for the stakeholder group and its constituency. So it basically, this process basically needs the participation of the wider community within the non-commercial stakeholder group. Now, in terms of how we are constituted as the Finance Committee, we've got one constituency. We've got Sam Frank as the chairperson, who's representing MPUC, and I'm representing NCUC within the committee. And the chair is also part of the committee, who has full voting rights and is also involved in the consensus process. So all the other members that are part of the Finance Committee, they are basically observers who are able to comment and discuss on anything that is being deliberated upon within the Finance Committee. Maybe next slide. I don't know if you're playing a slide. It's the next slide. Whereby we'll be talking about the finances that are kept by ICANN and how they are governed. Basically, ICANN has got two different types of funds. They've got a permanent fund and a temporary fund.
Dato, I'm just going to interrupt you for 1 second so that we actually have the presentation up there. There has been a small technical issue. All right?
Okay.
Just one moment. No, that's not it. All right, Tato, if you can present without reference to the presentation, maybe that would be easier. So please go ahead.
No.
Did you get it, Ria?
Okay,
thank you. Okay, it's up there, Tato. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay, so on the second slide, I was talking about basically the finances that are kept by ICANN and how they are governed. There's two types of finances. We've got the permanent funds, which consists of the operating fund and also the reserve fund. And these are governed under the ICANN investment policy. And then we've got the temporary funds, which constitute of the new GTLD application fees and the new GTLD program of proceeds. And both these are governed under the GTLD investment policy. So in regards to permanent funds, mainly on the operational fund, this fund has also been referred to as the working capital of ICANN, and its purpose is to provide day-to-day liquidity and support to ICANN operations. And the reserve fund is also known as the rainy day fund, and it's governed under the ICANN investment policy. This fund has got a target level of 12 months of operational expenses, and it's normally used to cover IANA transition costs and to address annual budget shortages and underestimates under the approval of the board. So when we're looking deeper into the temporary funds of ICANN, we've got the new GTLD application fees, and this is all the unspent money remaining from the fees that were collected from the new GTLD application in 2012. And then the purpose of this particular fund is to continue to cover the cost of the application processing until the program is closed itself, and then it also to refund applicants as applicants from time to time might be withdrawn from the new GTLD, and then to cover future expenses that are hard to predict. For example, like your operational, legal, reputational related types of costs, of course. And then lastly, we've got the auction proceeds. The auction proceeds, this is the money that is collected as a result of auctions of as a last alternative held by ICANN for the resolution of a string of contention sets of competing applicants for the GOT program. The next slide. Are we there?
Yes, that's a go on.
Okay, and then number three, we'll be looking at the annual operational budgets and the additional budget requests, because this is some of the work that I've been busy with ever since I've joined the Finance Committee. So I've been trying to do a little bit of research in terms of the spending patterns of ICANN in regards to budget requests and also in terms of how they set their annual budgets. So in regards to the, basically the budget request process sets aside specific requests for community, for activities that are not necessarily included in the recurring annual ICANN budget. These budget requests usually start around late during the year, and then they end around early the following year. And then the budget requests are implemented through the ICANN policies in terms of procurement, investments, and travel, because we have, obviously, service providers that ICANN works with to actually execute those. So This is how they manage the budget in terms of how they roll out for additional budget. But now, looking at the back end in terms of other parties that are involved within the ADR process, which is the additional budget, the finance team receives and processes ADRs and they conduct all appropriate review discussions and assessments. And then ICON board reviews, considers, and makes special requests, decisions with consultation in meeting A, which is usually at the beginning of the year. And approvals are done in May just before the meeting around. And then the financial year, and as we might know, it's around June every year. And then according to what I have shown on that table, that is basically an outline of the allocations that have been made within the GNSO, also within the stakeholder groups themselves. So there are a lot of opportunities to obtain finance from annual allocation. Just needs alignment of plans with ICANN operational plans. Because the GNSO and its stakeholder groups and including its constituency, they've been allocated more than 51% of the annual budget request during 2018.
I'm sorry to interrupt again, but we will be also discussing this in detail with Aidan in a bit. So if you can focus mostly for the newcomers as well on the financial committee, and so that they can ask you questions, I want them to have that time. We already have three comments down. So I'd like to ask you to kindly wrap up, please. Thank you so much, Tato, for being with us on the line. I know you had connectivity issues. Thank you.
Okay. I think if you can... last slide that talks about what our plans are moving forward as the finance committee. Basically, in terms of our plans currently, but we're still engaged. I'm still engaging Sam and also Fazane to actually see how do we solidify the plans moving forward for the finance committee, because we want to break income and expenses that have been received and recovered by NCSG and the community itself. And we want to also start managing the database so that we can start setting voluntary contribution levels from members who are within the stakeholder group itself. Assessment of budget allocations by ICANN for constituents, because there's not been so much clarity in terms of budget allocations at annual budget phase, not necessarily at the budget additional budget request level. So that is the end of my presentation. I'm ready to receive some questions.
Thank you, Tato. So at first we have Renata who sent a question, and then we will have a comment from Bruna, and then Aidan. Does anyone else has a question to Tato that I can put them on the queue? All right, so I'm going to start with the... Stephanie. Renata's question is, hi, Tato, great to hear from you. I would like to know if you have been following the news of the budget discussion on ICANN 62. There are sessions we can send comments on the budget. Are you planning to follow these sessions? And can you tell us if you will send any comments? Thank you. So go ahead, Tato, in brief, please. Thank you.
Yeah, basically the comments that I had for the financial budget of 2019, it's some of the things that Aidan has managed to articulate in the community comment on the document, especially in regard to the global stakeholder engagement spend, which seems to be a little bit too high. And then the problem with the crop, that it has been cut off without any consultation. So it was basically to just re-emphasize what there, but I strongly feel that in regards to the spending that has been happening, especially for remote offices, that you find that most of ICANN offices are located in Europe and America, that results in a lot of traveling expenses. But if, because I know one of the strategic goals of ICANN is to ensure that the functions of ICANN are regionalized. So establishment of those offices at regional offices would cut down some of those costs and would make ICANN more relevant in terms of engaging with local government stakeholders, businesses to drive the business industry.
Thank you, Tato. Okay, next on the line is Bruna. Okay. Aiden, would you like to comment or ask a question? Okay, Stephanie.
And apologies for coming in late. I'm really curious about item 5.2. Oh, this is Stephanie Perrin for the record, by the way. The database management of member organizations for fundraising purposes. What exactly is that? Because it rings alarm bells in my head about conflict of interest, and we don't do fundraising here. We don't accept financial contributions. I'm curious.
Thanks for the question, Stephanie. Basically, when I went through the NCSG charter, I actually looked at the roles and responsibilities. So that is where I am actually taking cue from. But as I said, that we are still going to communicate within the finance committee to actually find an amicable solution in terms of how to best move and how to prioritize in terms of the roles and responsibilities of the finance committee itself. So I hope that I fully answered the question. Thanks.
Okay. Do we have any comments or questions before we can read the statement of Sam? Yes, go ahead, Aiden.
Thanks. Aiden, Ferdinand, for the record. I just wanted to add a response to Renata's comment. So Renata was asking if Tato would be making comments on behalf of the NCUC on the budget. And I don't think at this meeting, and I don't think that would be appropriate because we don't have a common position on the budget at the NCUC level. We have, as the NCSG, submitted a comment, but the NCUC has not. So someone could submit comments in their personal capacity, but I just wanted to be very clear that we could not present that as the NCUC position. Thanks.
Thank you, Aiden. That's a very important point, and we'll make sure to coordinate, hopefully soon. Any other questions or comments before we can move to reading the statement of Sam Lefranco? All right. Seeing none, do you have any question, Farzi?
I'm going to follow up on this with Tato. 5.5, exploring with NCSG EC activities can be activated in the next 12 months. I would like to more information on that as the NCSG chair. Thank you.
Yes, Bruna, do you have any comment?
I was just highlighting that Tato is an NCUC representative at the financial committee of the NCSG. So whatever, I do believe that his opinions should be on the side of NCUC and not speaking on behalf of the whole NCSG. So I just stress that.
Yeah. Okay, Tato, any last final comments before we move to the next point? All right, seeing none. Thank you so much for joining us. So there was a report from the NCSG Finance Committee submitted by Sam Lefranco on March 1, 2018. He shared it with us, and I will be reading it, and it's right in front of us. So the NCSG Charter envisioned a much larger role for the NCSG Finance Committee than has occurred since the Charter was approved. For at least the past 4 years, the Finance Committee has not operated. It was resurrected by Ed Morris in 2017 and met briefly in 2017 to assess future options. The Finance Committee has no reviews, manages no expenditures, and performs no audits or due diligence on NCSG, NCUC, and NPOC financial matters. The Finance Committee looks to the NCSG Executive Committee to review the Finance Committee's remit and to suggest a work agenda within that remit. The NCSG Finance Committee remit is set down in Section 2.3 of the NCSG Charter, with operational details set out in Section 2.6. There is a quick review of the Charter content in Appendix A, and he provides a link, which we can visit later on. Appendix A, review of the NCSG Charter content. Yeah, he did actually. As per Section 2.3, NCSG Finance Committee, the NCSG Finance Committee is responsible for establishing a firm financial footing for the NCSG and administering NCSG funds within a defined framework that meets relevant legal requirements, as well as requirements imposed by ICAN. The NCSG FC's responsibilities include fundraising, setting voluntary contribution levels for members, determining procedures for the distribution of funds, and for monitoring the utilization of funds. The NCSG FC will also be responsible for the treasurer function, formation of the NCSG FC, its composition, and duties within the NCSG FC are set out in Section 2.6, which details considerable activities for the Financial Committee. As per 2.6.1, NCSG FC composition, the Finance Committee consists of one representative from each constituency. The NCSG chair participates as an ex officio member and is included in consensus process and votes. The FC may invite other members as needed, and each constituency may appoint an observer. As per 2.6.2, NCSG FC decision-making. Decisions are made by rough consensus, meaning that while all need not agree, and that no single member can veto a decision, minority views must be recorded. And finally, as per 2.6.3 NCSG FC leadership, a chair is elected by a two-third vote of the FC membership and is required to exercise any necessary treasurer functions for the NCSG. The NCSG chair may not serve as finance committee chair. 2.6.4 refers to work process. 2.6.5 refers to mailing list. And 2.6.6 refers to committee observers. So that was the statement of Sam Lanfranco. So if you have any comments or questions, we can write them down and make sure to send them to Sam and then send you back the answer since he couldn't make it with us, Farzi and Aiden. Farzi?
Thank you. I have numerous times pointed out to Sam that NCSG Finance Committee does not have anything to do with the financial matters of its constituencies. They are independent. We do not carry out any kind of due diligence. Unless Sam can show me in the charter that there is a language that says that we do not take any action for due diligence to carry out due diligence for the constituency. They are independent. They do what they want. Of course, diligently, and they have their own mechanism. To carry out as to NCSG and also the statement about did Sam actually make any kind of changes to this, or did he just copy paste from the charter? Copy paste. So he has not suggested any. And so yes, NCSG FC has not been active. So I suggest that we come up with a plan and start doing things, but without contribution of its members, it's not going to start doing things. Thank you.
Thank you, Farzi. Aiden?
Thanks for that. Aiden Fadalin for the record, and I'm going to essentially echo what Farzaneh just said. There is something of a logical fallacy in this, in that the letter begins by noting that the Finance Committee has no responsibilities, no revenue, and so forth, and then the charter is extracted. It does have responsibilities, but the current Finance Committee has never exercised them, and the author of this letter has been a member of the Finance Committee since its inception. I think if you review the public mailing list and review the correspondence, this could be the first piece of correspondence there is from this person. However, they have been a member since inception. Again, this is a recurring theme. These points have been raised at the intersessional this year and last year by the same member, who has never actually, despite being the longest serving member of the Finance Committee, has never actually contributed to the Finance Committee. And I think that's important to note. Thanks.
Thank you, Aiden. Just so that we have a positive note going forward, is there an action item that you'd like us to put down so that we can send it also to Sam and so that we can see something materialized after this? Yes, Farzi.
Farzana is speaking. Actually, Sam is the MPOC representative to NCSGC. So an action item for Sam on behalf of NCUC, but if Sam wants to start doing something, then let's come up with a work plan within next month for the NCSG Finance Committee responsibility and actions to be taken. That could be an action item.
Yes, that's a great point, Farzi. Thank you for raising it. Stephanie?
I just wanted to, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I just wanted to note my concern and alarm. I've got my risk management hat on here. We are intervening very actively at the GNSO level in the ICANN budget, and we're trying to have an influence there, and we're talking due diligence, and we're talking fiscal prudence, and we're talking living within a time of shrinking resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm totally with everyone in their desire to get more of my members coming to meetings. We need money. However, and nothing prevents the organizations themselves, whoever we are representing, doing their fundraising and sponsoring their members to come to represent them at an ICANN meeting. But I just think that management of funds at ICANN at the constituency level is fraught with peril. I would be willing to bet that setting up the accountability mechanisms so that we all don't look really bad when we're discussing the main budget, setting up those accountability members, managing the oversight of our members when we have no power to manage the actions of our members. We can't even encourage our members or force them to live within the travel guidelines. We have no control over, I'm just using that, it's a nice handy thing. Anybody who's ever run an organization knows you manage your travel budget centrally and you make it last. That's not how we live at ICANN. So I'm just wondering how on earth. And why am I concerned? Because I can't, as a counselor, preach COSO compliance models and risk management and human rights and all of these things within an ICANN overall framework and have no means of doing that at the constituency and stakeholder group level. So I'm just putting that on the table. We don't have the mechanisms, and if you want to spend the next 5 years developing them, God bless you, but it won't be me helping you because I think this is a real can of worms. I'm being extremely explicit in interest of being frank and open and honest with your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. These are really important points, and they give you a preview of how things happen in these constituencies and how we debate together. But this, just to make sure that this is clear, that the presentation is simply to let you know who is behind every single aspect of administration in NCUC generally. So it's Sam, as we read his statement and as we commented on his statement, and it's Tato before him. And now I'll have the pleasure to introduce Aidan Ferdelin, who will be discussing the FY19 budget. Thank you to Tato and thank you to Sam for sending the document. Can we go back to the agenda, please, Rio?
And thank you very much for that, Elsa. Hi, everyone. Aidan Ferdelin for the record. So one of the most important public comment opportunities that we have every year is our chance to submit a comment on ICANN's budget and operating plan for the fiscal year ahead. And this is our chance as representatives of the non-commercial community to ask for different spending priorities to be made, to question aspects of ICANN's operations, and to express our views on the functioning of ICANN, the organization. The comment period ended last week on March 8, and we submitted a 5-page comment. I am not a member of the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee did not contribute to the development of reviewing the ICANN budget or, reviewing any of the associated documents to understand how the projects might influence us. However, the policy committee took that responsibility on because it was very important that we do make a submission. So within our comment, we structured it around a few trains of thought. One of them was, what are our responsibilities now that we're a part of the empowered community? Theoretically, at least, we could reject the budget if we wanted to do so. Now, we're not proposing to do that this year, of course. But we certainly took that responsibility very seriously, and we went through the budget line by line to understand where resources were being allocated. It was difficult for us to approximate the levels of financial support that ICANN provides either directly or indirectly to each of the stakeholder groups, supporting organizations, advisory committees. And that was a piece of feedback that we shared in our comment, that we really need a bit more granularity, moving forward. And we also want to have an executive summary that says, at a glance, what's in and what's out of the budget. We prepared our comment also at the council level as part of the council standing committee on budget and operations. So while we submitted an independent comment, which goes into more detail, we engaged in this cross-community committee to understand what red flags other parts of the GNSO had raised so that we could have our antennas up in case there was something that would also impact us. So a lot of work went into that. In terms of the specific comments that we made, we of course observed the fact that ICANN is having revenue is stagnating. We happen to believe that it will continue to stagnate or decline in the future. And in terms of specific comments, we focused on where the bulk of the organization's resources were being allocated. And we said that the small sliver of the budget that is allocated to the NCSG should not be, the small sliver of the budget that is allocated to community support in general should not be the first to be cut. As it is, this was, as the NCUC chair said, to quote her verbatim, a very cruel budget. And I think that's a fair assessment, because what we saw was the additional budgetary request envelope, which we used to fund all of our capacity building programs, our policy course this week, for instance, that has been slashed by two-thirds. CROP, which we used to conduct our regional outreach, was entirely eliminated with no prior notification to us. And that troubled us on a procedural front because CROP was a part of the core budget. And so then we had to look very diligently across the entire budget to understand what other core projects that we have come to rely on have disappeared in the middle of the night. We looked at the bulk of the organization's spend, 73%, is spent on personnel costs or professional services. And so we understand that a lot of that is because of requests that the community makes, that we want support in developing this area. But we did want, and we did ask for further granularity in terms of what constitutes professional services. We think it means legal advice, maybe transcription services, maybe consultants. But we would like to know a bit better as to what does that actually entail. And we also sought to understand, in terms of personnel costs, how do they vary by location? Is it, for instance, is it more expensive because of 401k contributions, etc., to have someone based in the United States versus in another region? So we sought to get some more clarity there. Just wanting some more information about ICANN's compensation structure broken down by office location. That's a request that we've made, and we're hopeful we'll get some more information there. We were... We also expressed our concern that we could not locate in the budget any funds for GDPR-related implementation work in 2019. As you've probably heard this week, GDPR is a topic of concern to our, a topic that we track very closely. And so we do not believe that this is going to be all wrapped up this fiscal year, and we happen to have a suspicion that there might be a need for resources to be found for that next year. We also were quite realistic in saying that we should not be immune from cuts as the NCSG. We just want cuts to be made fairly across the entire organization. No one should be unfairly penalized. And we helped identify a few areas where we thought, you know, perhaps we could be reasonable here. And one of them, for instance, was to do with translation and interpretation. So we said very clearly that we support a multilingual internet, but for instance, for our meeting in Panama City, where we usually request translation, maybe we only need it into languages that are likely to be used, for instance, Spanish, and maybe we don't need it into all UN languages for some of the high-interest sessions. So that was a suggestion that we put forward in terms of where we thought we might be able to save some resources. We also spoke about the reserve fund. This is something that the NCSG has been quite active in saying, that given the important role that ICANN plays in managing this global public resource, the Internet's domain name system, The reserve fund should be able to support the organization's operating expenses. At the moment, it's essentially empty. It covers around 4 months of operating expenses, which we think is inadequate. And the organization also seems to believe that because as of about a week ago, a public consultation has now opened, inviting us to comment further on that. We also, I might wrap up my comments there, but essentially, then the main theme going through our comment on the budget is that we just want to be involved more. We are realistic, we are pragmatic, we understand that our revenue is stagnating. We want to help identify where cuts should be. We don't simply want to be on the receiving end of cuts because we know, I think most of us have seen areas where we think we don't need that resource, but to hear that the two of the resources that we hold most dearly to us, crop and the additional budgetary request envelope, that those two were cut, that was problematic for us. We can name other things instead. thanks. Happy to take any questions on the comment.
Very briefly, Aidan, did you get any feedback on the public comment that was put up?
I might just comment briefly on how we developed it first, and then I will say if the organization has responded. So we developed it in a bottom-up manner as a community. I wrote the first draft. We shared it on our main discussion list, and we received a few comments from members. It was also shared amongst the policy committee, where there was a significant amount of wordsmithing and further investigation to find additional points. And we also engaged with the GNSO Council Standing Committee on Budget and Operations to get an idea for what we might have missed that other communities had identified. And then we submitted our comment only a week ago. We have not received any formal comments from ICANN.org at this stage, but informally we've certainly received confirmation that it's been received and an understanding of... We've engaged in some discussions around how do you analyze public comments, because we understand it's not a referendum. The fact that we submit a comment or that 20 people submit a comment or 40 people submit a comment saying preserve this should not necessarily mean it is preserved. There does need to be some level of evaluation. And so we've engaged in those conversations to understand how are you going to be prioritizing the comments that come back in? What is the process there? And the feedback we've received so far is certainly that people have read our comment. And they've expressed opinions about certain parts of it, which is positive feedback, I think.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Aidan. Any questions in the room to Aidan before we move on to... Yeah, okay. Arsène and anyone else? Oh, there's a question. Okay. Can we read the remote question first, please? Thank you, Ria.
Shahul asked, is there any discussions or meetings happening in ICANN 61 on the ICANN 51... Oh, I'm sorry, FY19 budget and operations plan?
Yes, as we speak, there is one happening. however, this is not... the purpose of the meeting that is happening as we speak is more an informal consultation. So the formal consultation process has now ended. It is no longer possible to submit a comment on the budget. However, the purpose of the meeting happening now is that those who submitted comments already, but where ICANN.org might have clarifying questions around what was submitted, can be raised there. However, I have a suspicion that they will also have an open mic and so that others would be free to continue to share their thoughts.
Thank you, Aidan. Okay, Arsène?
Thank you very much for that, Arsène Tungali. For the record, I think I have a few comments and a question, and allow me to go back to the just a few comments on the finance committee, and then the question will be on the budget maybe.
Arsène, you might not get a reply from them. Comments, I'm not sure Tato is still with us.
It's not like question, but just a few comments.
Great, Tato.
And these are personal opinions. I may be wrong. So, but I have the impression that from the discussion we just had, like many people kind of don't like the finance committee. And I'm saying this, this is a personal opinion. And one of the reasons maybe is because they have done quite nothing since the inception in the past. That's one. But the second comment is, now that we've managed to bring it back, can we agree on their plan as it was presented just by Tato, and help them do the job that is prescribed for them in the charter? So, and the question would be, we said that they were not much involved in the comments that was drafted for this FY19, and I was wondering, maybe it's because they were just started. And my question is now, what do we think will be their role in the next FY? I mean, the FY20. Are we leaving the job of drafting the comments to the PC, or are we handing it back to the finance committee? That would be the question.
Okay, thank you, Arsene. We will not open the conversation much about the FC anymore, but I will give the floor to Rafik for a very, very brief comment, and then Aidan to answer the question.
Okay, thanks. This is Rafik speaking. So anyway, just to clarify, because since we have some statement here. First, I mean, I don't think anybody say that we don't like the Financial Committee. For some historical reason, they were not active, so it happens with many committees, so it's not a problem. And it's fine that they are starting, I think, if we are getting a momentum. Regarding the public comment, it's not the policy committee drafting. We don't draft. We review, we encourage people to draft, and we get volunteers. The financial committee, they can draft any comments, but by our charter, the policy committee, which build any position for NCSG, and that we have to endorse and review it. So they can work on that. And then when it comes the time of submission, they have to go through the policy committee. So we had that separation. And in terms of what they need to do, I mean, I heard this many times. They have just to look at the NCSG charter. It's clear and the different task and what is expected from the finance committee. So they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They have just to go through that and build their action plan.
Thank you very much, Rafik, for being brief. You'll get a cookie after this meeting. Aidan? No, okay, no comment. Okay, so I will give the floor right now to... Do you have a question? Okay, last one, please. Go ahead, Sherry.
I'm Sherry, a fellow. Just a factual question to clarify my understanding. Is there a regular fund for long-term planning? Is there a reason for this?
A long-term, just so that I understand the question correctly, a long-term fund for a fund for long-term planning within the NCUC, or is ICANN the organization, or
NCUC?
To my knowledge, no.
Okay, thank you, Sherry, for the question. Is there? Okay, quick, please, because we need to go to this next point. Yes, Anna, go ahead.
Not a comment, not a question, more like a comment. So you were suggesting cost-cutting when it comes to translation services. So while that makes sense in a place like Panama or Spain, the corollary to that would be that you eliminate the UN languages when you go to regions that don't fall under those UN languages and have local language translations as well, right? But that is not something that has been done by ICANN in any of the places that don't fall under that system. So would we be moving to a place where you have more local language translations in that case? Like for India, where, I don't know, Hindi is common, or South Africa, where there are 13 official languages?
Thanks for the question. Aidan Ferdinand for the record. So that is a decision that ICANN.org makes as to how they do translation. So I know in the budget, for instance, for the meeting in Japan, they do have Japanese translation. So I'm actually not sure how the determination is made as to when they go outside of the framework of the UN languages and use local languages. But I know that the provision is sometimes made. But I think that's an ICANN.org decision.
Stephanie?
If memory serves, the hosting country, because remember, the hosting country puts up a lot of money to host. This isn't all covered by ICANN. And if they want local translation, they pay for it. That older members, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my understanding. So ICANN only has money for the UN languages, and I would beg to differ with my worthy colleague to my left. The revenues are not just stagnating, they're shrinking. So the question that is being raised is, and you might not have heard that very clearly from our chief executive officer, but it's bad. We are not expecting the money to expand, and the question is, can we even afford this UN superstructure with the translation services when they're not really being utilized? So that's a question.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Okay, thank you for the questions. And we're going next to Farrell, who is in the policy as a policy committee representative. You have 5 minutes, Farrell, to present. Go ahead.
Thank you, Elsa. Farrell Foley for the record. And the chair of the SDG policy committee is here, so I will not talk too much on what we do and how we do it. But for the newcomers, I will just say that the policy committee is responsible for planning and organizing policy, all policy-related issues for the NCSD. And as a NCUC representative to the NCSD, my role is principally to act as a liaison between the NCSD policy committee and the NCUC. So we try to identify what key point or what key policy related issue are priority for us within the NCUC, and then try to call for volunteers so that they can comment, write public comment, and within the policy committee we have to discuss them and plan how we are going to submit them. So that's mainly what's my task within. And recently the most important thing we have been commenting on the GDPR and of response to the GAC and the budget thing that Aiden just talked about. And there are many people working hard, like Stephanie, who I presume she didn't sleep yesterday very early about the GDPR stuff. And those kind of things that we care about and share within the NCUC list itself so that people can come out and give what they think about, so that we organize ourselves to be present in all working groups that deal about the policies. And that's it. I would rather wait for questions. I will not take more time to talk about that. But the main role is to act as a liaison between the NCSD Policy Committee and the NCUC. Thank you.
Thanks, Farrell. Any questions to Farrell? Okay. Comment from Renata. Farrell, you also participated on policy course. Do you feel it contributed to your PC activity? Actually, that was a question. Yes, thank you, Renata.
Yes, of course. Farrell Foley for the record. Thanks, Renata, for this question. I just do not want to be long, but of course, after these 2 days of policy writing policy course, what came up is now we can agree upon a commonly accepted template to write policy, because so far each individual who acts as a pen holder has his or her own style of writing policy. So sometimes it's very difficult to edit or to make suggestions to public comment being drafted. So following these courses give us the idea to make a pre-established template that from now onwards we can use to write policy, and it will be very easy for people who want to comment or make suggestions to know, okay, this is the structure and we know exactly what is being put where, and we can edit or make suggestions accordingly. So yes, it was a great course, and I encourage the NCSD or the NCUC committee to plan to conduct it again if possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Farrell. Bruno?
Just a little explanation on what was the policy course for those of you who are not understanding. It was such a good opportunity that we applied for last year, and then we got the chance to sit down for a day and a half to learn some tips and introductions to good policy writing techniques. It was facilitated by Jean Trengrove, and we spent the past 2 days doing this. So,
thank you. Yes, Claudio?
On the policy course also, I don't know if Hannah is listening, and Farsi with the initiative took the initiative that made this happen, and it was really a very interesting experience. We learned strategies, in fact. There are, in fact, templates that Farsi says, but Jim is a very experienced guy, so we know different problems will demand in the different approaches. But at least having a template and and being able to exercise it over 2 days, as we did, with outputs, in group, alone, as a pen holder, as a collaborator, very interesting exercise. I think the experience was very valuable. I've been following Stefan's concern about the certification and everything. I follow. This is something we should be very careful not to certify or declare something that did not happen. Absolutely, it is not the case here because we have it. We have it. We have the experience. We have the records. But I do acknowledge that there is this concern, mainly if the experience escalates and is offered again. It was a very, very, very profitable and useful activity. Thanks, Hansa.
Thank you so much, Claudio. Arsène, you have a...
Yeah, Arsène here. Are you going to make those templates available for everyone, for those of us who didn't attend the course? How will we be able to look at those templates to help us?
The templates were previous public comments that both NCSG and NCSG submitted. So we went through Aiden's comment on the budget. We also went through a previous comment by Robin, I guess, from 2009. So we took some of the comments the stakeholder groups submitted before and studied based on them. So,
all right. Yes, Farrell, did you want to say anything? And then Stephanie, we will entertain the question. Go ahead, Farrell.
Furthermore, the idea is to have a template material that will be present on our wiki page. So whenever anybody wants to draft or write a public command, he can just go download this document and start from there. And it helps anybody to comment easier. That's actually the idea. So it will be published when it's ready.
Okay, Stephanie and then Rafik.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, just to say, I think this is a terrific idea. We did try it before. When you're rushed and you're trying to pump out comments, it's really easy to forget the sort of tombstone data at the beginning. And if you look at the website and try and decipher what people are commenting on, if the things go astray from where they're parked on the website, we had a little bit of a discussion about how bad the website is earlier this morning. But, you know, date, name of the, you know, link to the report you're commenting on, all of those basic things, it's easy to forget that, and we should have some discipline, I think, and do it that way. And we had a little sidebar conversation after the discussion this morning that we really want our human rights impact assessment template to be kind of a standard appendix attached to all of our PDPs, because, you know, we might wait a while for ICANN to implement that, but we can implement it in our comments. So, terrific idea. Thank you.
Extremely important point raised by Stephanie and Farrell. Rafik?
Thanks, Farrell. In fact, the idea of a template was discussed before, but for many times at the policy committee, but I think if we have a sample, I discussed with you, Farrell, about that a few days ago, that will be helpful so we can agree on some format or have a starting point. I mean, I think other groups are doing that. The example I have in mind is the business constituency. Yes. Okay. Business constituency template. Yeah. So just in terms of, so we will wait for the template as an example. We can work on that in the NCSG policy committee, and we put when we do the call of volunteers, we can just really put that in the Google Docs so people can use it directly.
Great. So last two comments, one from Remote and one from Farsi. Shahur Hamid, Farrell, the idea of hosting template on our wiki page is great, would really help newcomers like me who wanted to contribute to policy writing but couldn't make it for the course. All right, Farsi, last comment.
Yeah,
So, Farzan Abadi speaking. I just want to tell those people that are sitting in the back, we are going to talk about really interesting stuff about issue specific from now on. So please stay and don't get dissuaded.
Stealing the highlights, huh? Stealing the spotlights, Farzi. No cookie for you at the end of the session. All right. So now, without further ado, we're going to go to the next point on the agenda, which is regional briefings. And I have the pleasure to have Renata on the line with us, the chair of NCUC, who will be giving us a brief. And then we'll go forward with EC colleagues here from the NCUC to give also briefs or small comments after Renata's comment. Renata, are you with us?
Hi, everyone. Can great. You hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Renata. Go ahead. It's great to have you.
Okay. Yes, I first, I think the first regional briefing of EC that we have to focus on is a lot of things, because this EC did a lot at Icon 61, and it's great to see how they are eating. And for those who are our members, you may have already received messages from the regional lists, but most importantly, the idea of the EC is to help atomize our inReach. So you can count on the EC to help you engage in NCC, to answer questions. So I just wanted to give this big thanks to all of them and present them to tell them who they are. They will present themselves and that they are available to talk. Thanks.
Thank you, Renata. All right. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Bruna, who also was the chair of the session in the first part of this meeting. She is the LAC representative at the Executive Committee of NCUC. So go ahead for a small brief.
Really, really quick. As I don't want to steal the time from jurisdiction and domain abuse discussions. Just a quick update. We had approved recently our crop. We submitted a crop request for a member of ours, Roxane, to attend LACNIC, which is one of the RRR's meeting. LACNIC 29 will take place in Panama. We will be joining some sessions there, and I'll be working with Roxane from now on, just so her representation and participation at the program and both LACNIC is done properly. So me and Renata will be working with her with regard to her preparation. So that's it.
Great. Okay, so Michael was here, but he left the room. This is just an opportunity to let you guys know that you can reach out to us on our regional list, on our mailing, on our emails, even by Skype, to let us know if you have any questions or any if you need to do anything related to the PDP, if you need a focal point, which leads me to actually, let me mention the names of the EC. We have Ines Hafaid for Africa. We have Michael Karanikolas for North America. We have Louise, Marie Hurel for, representing EU, Bruna and myself, Elsa, representing Asia Pacific. So please don't hesitate to reach out to any of us, because there are no borders when it comes to support. So without further ado, I'd like to definitely have Farzi and Tatiana go ahead being our focal points on jurisdiction and domain abuse. We're going to start with Farzan Ebadi, who's the NCSG chair currently. Go ahead, Farzi.
Thank you very much. So the jurisdiction group is kind of like a subgroup of the accountability work stream. So in the first work stream, we had the accountability of ICA in general, and then there were some issues that they decided to discuss in a second work stream, and jurisdiction was one of them. The jurisdiction of ICANN is really important because it might have consequences for ICANN function. So when we were discussing, when the group started discussing the scope of the jurisdiction talk, we decided that it came to consensus that that we are not going to talk about the status quo. We are not going to talk about moving ICANN from the U.S. to another place. But what we're going to talk about is the consequences of jurisdiction, the U.S. jurisdiction on ICANN function. How much time do I have? So I can go on. So we talked about the consequences. I'm only going to mention some of the recommendations that we agreed and are in the report. There was a problem that was reported 3 years ago that domain name registrants would get their domain name confiscated because the registrar would argue that you are based in a sanctioned U.S. sanctioned country, and I am going. I cannot extend your domain name, although they were not even based in the U.S. So one of the impression was that because the registrars thought that they have to they have a contract with ICANN, so they have to follow ICANN, a U.S. jurisdiction, and have to apply U.S. law. So they did not want to extend the domain name of the people residing in sanctioned countries. And when I say sanctioned countries, I mean Iran and a couple of other places. But so we came up with concrete recommendations in the jurisdiction group to resolve this issue, but also resolve the issue of because if you want to do business with ICANN, if you want to be a registry, if you want to be a registrar, you need to get a waiver from the U.S. government that can allow you to do business. And that waiver takes a long time. It's like a license. It takes a long time to do, but although ICANN has been doing it, it has not been, it was not very transparent in the process, and also it said that it is not obliged to pursue such a license. So we recommended that they remove the sentence that it says it's not obliged to pursue such a license, so that I can for sure look into this issue and pursue a license for the sanctioned countries. But also we suggested that they should look for a more permanent position, a more permanent solution, which is a OFAC general license, which is, oh gosh, I said OFAC, I didn't want to say that word. But OFAC is the Office of U.S. Treasury. OFAC. So it's a U.S. Regulatory agency that looks after the these sanctioned regulations. So we actually recommended ICANN to look into getting a general license that would apply to everyone when they want to deal with ICANN, because ICANN is a transnational, global organization that facilitates access to DNS. If it cannot carry out this function, then it has breached its mission, which is in the bylaws. So we came up with these recommendations. And, you know, there's a really interesting story behind this, especially for people that want to get involved. I am from Iran, and people, entrepreneurs, would come to me and say, our domain names gets confiscated, and they had the impression that it was because of the U.S. ICANN U.S. jurisdiction, and we managed to kind of get this group to come up with these recommendations that might help with the situation and access to domain names and DNS in sanctioned countries. So that was a success story. And hopefully the board will adopt it. If we had an interesting conversation today with the board, and their comments were not very positive, but they also said that the only concern is really the budget and how they are going to they are going to implement these recommendations. And I think that's about it. Oh, and we recommended that the jurisdiction issue should be discussed furthermore to resolve some of the matters that we could not resolve. And that is, we don't know, it has not gotten enough traction among the community. We don't know if that is going to happen, but there might be a chance to talk thoroughly about this later on and look at other issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Farzi, for the work you do and for your presentation and for being with us. So any questions about jurisdiction to Farzi? Please go ahead. Okay, so there's a question from Shahul. Would you like to read it, Ria?
Shahul asked, what is the rationale of GAC members who oppose the WS2 report? Is it true they want to move ICANN to Geneva?
I think they want to move ICANN to Ibiza. there is no rationale other than politics. So what they wanted to, they didn't want, they actually, we talked to Brazil, Brazilian government a lot about this. They said they like the recommendations. They want to support them, but unfortunately the process did not allow them to support it partially. So in order to, they had to object to the whole report. However, governments feel that we did not discuss some matters that they want to discuss. For example, getting partial immunity for ICANN so that U.S. laws do not apply to. And there is a big discussion in the community, because some part of the community says that, well, we came up with all these accountability mechanisms which are based on California law, and now if you get immunity for ICANN, then we are not going to hold these guys up accountable. So this is one part of the discussion, and then the other side says that, well, I want partial immunity, so, or maybe we can come up with other accountability mechanism, which is, but the rationale, it's mainly politics, and also they wanted to discuss the immunity part, and they just want to, I think they want to be forceful in discussing it, continuing the discussion. Yeah, and by the way, government of Iran also objected to the report.
Okay, thank you, Farzi. We have another question. Would you like to read it, Ria, from Tomslin?
From Tomslin, on the jurisdiction recommendations, are there any timelines as to when the board should act or consider them?
That is a very good question. We actually, on purpose, put in recommended in the recommendation that the board, after approving the recommendations, after should not delay more than the implementation more than over 6 months. So we wanted to get the board to commit to us.
I heard rumors of an implementation team. Have you heard those rumors?
I would like to know about this team.
Yes, Tatiana.
So the implementation, we go. That's another phase. So at the moment, we are still at the approval level. We are at the second reading now. It has to go to public comment, and then go to board for approval, and then. And then we think about implementation.
Yes, Tanya, and one last comment from Robin after Tanya.
I think the implementation team is not going to be for every work stream too, right? Because some of them require more implementation from the community, the effort, some of them less. I'm not aware about implementation team on jurisdiction. No, on human rights maybe, but definitely not on jurisdiction. Am I right, Robin?
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record, and I am NCSG's representative to the overall CCWG accountability, and we met on Friday, and they did talk about on Friday sort of the creation of an implementation team to implement the workstream two recommendations, but it really isn't like a separate thing. What we're talking about are the rapporteurs of the different work streams would sort of make sure that their recommendations get implemented properly, so that was what they were talking about with this implementation team.
Kind of oversight.
Exactly, oversight, to make sure that what we recommended ultimately gets adopted, that it doesn't get changed somewhere along the way, as has happened in the past. So that's why we needed to be sure that we could provide some kind of oversight on the implementation of these recommendations.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Robin, for the information. So without further ado, I think we can move a bit out of this and go more into domain abuse. And Farzi is always around, so we can always ask her questions as a focal point. So Tanya, the floor is yours. Thank you, Farzi.
Thank you very much, Tatiana Trupino, for the record. And just a disclaimer, you can also ask Farzi about domain abuse, domain name abuse. So why we are dealing with the domain name abuse? Well, apparently it isn't the ICANN mission to provide security and stability of the internet identifiers, and it isn't the core of the ICANN mission to take care of this. And here we run into the wall concerning what domain abuse is. What are the threats ICANN actually is capable and empowered to tackle within its mission? Because if you think about security, crime, there are different type of threats. Some of them purely technical. Some of them tackle the core of security and stability of the internet. This is where we believe ICANN should step in and address these threats. But what we are facing currently is that there are certain groups at ICANN who want ICANN to address the problem, for example, of illegal content, copyright, child online protection. So not technical threats which tackle security and stability of the internet, not DNS attacks, for example, but pure content threats. And not it's not only the notion of the content threats, right? It is what is illegal and to what degree. Because if you're thinking about like heavy crime, and sometimes they want ICANN to address just IP infringements to identify and take down content which just infringing copyright or intellectual property right in some sense. And that's where we are stepping in, because there are some, some contradictions between the ICANN mission and previous public interest commitments that ICANN made, and registries and registrars agreement, which was drafted before the transition from the U.S. oversight and before ICANN community agreed on the new ICANN, narrowed ICANN mission. So we have different ways to circumvent ICANN mission and say, no, it's not only pure technical threats. Registries and registrars also have to tackle or report illegal content. Mm-hmm. And what is interesting, there are if you think about ICANN organization and ICANN community, in a way, registries and registrars can do whatever they want with what they have. They can establish whatever rules. If they don't want to have any information about apples on their website, they can say no apples. If they want to tackle copyright infringements, they can say, yes, we are going to do this. And they can enforce by contract. And
it's not like I'm personally fine with this, but we have to be. What we are trying to do is to prevent ICANN to become a regulator of this. We want to prevent ICANN from establishing any rules for registries and registrars in either way, be it prohibiting them from establishing their rules for regulating content or drafting some rules and enforcing them. So recently, for example, there was this domain abuse reporting initiative, which came up at ICANN, and we had a session in Abu Dhabi concerning the reporting of the domain name abuse. But interestingly, once you start talking about reporting, you've got the whole bunch of IPC lawyers, intellectual property lawyers influx, and law enforcement influx saying, why do you even need to collect data about abuse? If you are collecting data, you have to do something. You have to check what is going on, and you have to make registries and registrars act upon this. So we are trying to develop for ourselves an early warning system to see how registries and registrars and IP lawyers are trying to circumvent the ICANN mission, because they do have some loopholes in what we have now, like registries or registrars agreement I mentioned, or domain abuse reporting system. And we're trying to say that apart from content regulation, which ICANN cannot do, there are valid arguments against ICANN intervening anyhow and forcing registries and registrars to do something. Well, first of all, it is a pure domain of law enforcement to fight this type of abuse. ICANN is not a police. Registries and registrars are not a police. And by taking the content down, you're still not addressing the problem of crime. You have to catch the guys. So ICANN is not, you know, in the position of registries and registrars to really address this problem. And there is also, as we always point out, there is a big, grey, large, huge area between collecting statistics and having the action. Because you can't just simply say, if ICANN has statistics, we can, ICANN, can force registries and registrars to act upon this, because there should be mechanisms for verification. There should be redress systems, so there should be due process. And I'll close it here, and if you have any questions here or later, you can just address, you can just approach me, and we can try to figure out what your interest is. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tanya. Any question? Yes, Claudio, go ahead. Any other question before, so that we put them down? We'll give a chance for three questions. Right. Anyone in the back? No?
Yes.
Okay, is that Tato with us?
Sure. Yes. Yeah,
so okay, we'll take your question right after Claudio. Go ahead, Claudio.
All right, thank you. Yes, Claudio Senna here. I would like Tatiana to know if that's the early warning system you talked about. How what's the stage of the draft?
No. Early warning system is an euphemism. What we are trying to do, Farzan and me, Milton Müller, some other guys, we are trying to see what kind of things are going on with intellectual property constituency, cross community working sessions, what kind of debate is going on to But raise a red flag for ourselves.
Is a structure for that?
No. We are collaborating on our own. Like, for example, Stephanie Perrin can tell us, hey, look, what is going on here or there, or someone else, you know, and we just, okay.
It's general monitoring.
Yeah. Okay. It's general monitoring we are doing of this issue.
So I had a beautiful task of identifying all the DNS abuse sessions with the GAC and DAR and many of them, and I try to attend them to see how they explain what abuse is, what they tell GAC, and
so it's just, we know that if we intervene too late, it might be really too late, because the debate will go into the weeds already or too far, and it would be too late for us to step in and say and really voice our position. But up to now we have been successful, and we also are trying to, because, you know, I have to say, law enforcement have legitimate demands. They do. And we are trying to separate legitimate demands from the demands which, in our opinion, might be legitimate but not related to ICANN mission.
Thank you, Tanya. Okay, Tato, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, my question to Fazane, thanks for the information around tour restriction. So basically my question is this, what I posted to the chat. It's regarding the jurisdiction challenges that are posed by U.S. and ICANN relations to see whether are there any financial consequences to based on these challenges that we're talking about, because you've mentioned issues of confiscations of domains. Maybe has there been any GATLD withdrawals, because it might affect the financial prospects of ICANN based on the confidence that it tries to actually achieve with the global community. Thanks.
I'm sorry, the audio is a bit muffled. And if Tato, can you please just in one sentence repeat your question?
My question is around to restriction challenges that are posed by the U.S. the U.S. ICANN relations. What is the financial impact does this have on ICANN financially?
The U.S. restriction. What are the financial implications? I don't know. Well, the thing is that they cannot accept applications from these new TLD applicants, for example, and that could be a problem, and they won't get money. Go ahead.
It's just Claudio here speaking. Just I think the interim report had data on a research that didn't go to financial impact. But they listed cases, so that might be a way for him to go further information. I remember that there were not financial implication information, but there was a reference to amount of cases, 4, I think.
So if you mean the issues that the jurisdiction report actually mentioned, those issues, we came up with the issues. So... yeah, we wrote those issues. So basically, I'm not. But the financial thing is that one of the other things that we mentioned in the group, but it didn't. I don't know if it's in the report or not, Claudio. You can tell us. But the financial, for example, if you want to wire money from a sanctioned country to ICANN, you cannot because you are financially sanctioned. So they have to kind of like. Go through a third party, it costs them money, and this would be the financial implication on the other party, not ICANN.
Okay, thank you very much for your questions. Since we actually didn't have time to go through WS2, we're going to be going to it next with Rafik Damak, who's the co-rapporteur for diversity subgroup. Thank you so much for your questions so far, and Rafik, the floor is yours.
Okay, thanks. I don't think it will take that much time because there were several updates. So maybe just since we have some newcomer, since people had a lot of fun Workstream 1, they said, okay, let's have Workstream 2. So the second season, but like any TV series, we should stop after the first or second. Okay, so basically that the Workstream 2 covered the thing what was not possible to do during the Workstream 1. And we have, I think, eight subgroups with participation from the NCSG. And we even have several of our members as co-rapporteur, which means that they are taking the lead on drafting and getting input from subgroup members. So we have first like the staff accountability. We have also the Ombudsman office jurisdiction that was introduced by Farzane. We also have the supporting organization and advisory committee accountability. And I think also, I think Farzana was the co-rapporteur, if I'm not mistaken. And I think this is maybe one of interest for us. We have also the human rights subgroup that was led by Niels, and then the transparency by Michael, and the good faith conduct And the final one is diversity, that with was the one of the co-rapporteur. So basically, in terms of process, all the subgroup delivered their recommendation, and they were approved by what we call the second reading in last Friday. So technically now the all subgroup finished. What will happen is the consolidation of all this recommendation in one report, see if there is any consistency, if there is an overlap, and trying to fix that. And then we will have a public comment. So I think the expectation from public comment that we are not going to request big change the recommendation, but just to see, to offer opportunity for the community to comment. And we have that expectation to get approval by the chartering organization in June. So we the kind of the deadline really drove all subgroups to deliver their work on time, because we have that budget limit that even after we get extension, we cannot get over that. So we are in time. All subgroups delivered their comments. So everything looks okay, looks bright. So we will just wait for the chartering organization to approve and for the final report and then the board. So I guess now the discussions about by discussion by the board, they are saying that they are not going to oppose, but it's all about the budget, the cost. And this is maybe that the kind of not fight, but something we have to monitor is the implementation of those recommendations. So I guess the discussion is how we will do that. Mm-hmm. So there is the oversight from the group on how the implementation will be done. Usually the implementation is tasked to the IGAN organization and the staff. But by experience, as Robin raised, we had issue before in regarding GNSO policy and so on. But I think things are improving, and even for the workstream one and the stewardship transition, with having that oversight, I think the oversight team, that they did a good job and they're still working. So we did, I think, the first phase. Now it's to implement. How long it will take, to which extent that everything will be done in time, that remains a question. So I think the conclusion is that as a group, we did a good job by participating in the different subgroups. That was challenging because it was never really planned like 3-4 years ago. That's something that happened with the stewardship transition, but we could cope with that. And we could advocate for several of our positions, like jurisdiction, diversity, human rights, and so on. Are we happy with everything? No. We cannot get everything. And that's why I think that maybe the drawbacks here is we, because of the time limit, and there was like the pushback, oh, if you are recommending this, are you sure that we can implement that in budget-wise and so on? And there was some resistance. But generally, I think we did a good job. So now the question is, everything will be implemented in time or not? Okay, I think that's it. But since we have some co-rapporteur, maybe they can add some thought. We heard about transparency, I think. We heard about jurisdiction, but maybe from other subgroup if needed. So. Yeah.
Thank you, Rafiq. Anyone who wants to add anything to Tanya? Did you want to add anything to? No?
No, I think Rafiq covered this super comprehensively.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much, Rafiq. Any questions on the floor? From the back as well. You're more than welcome to ask questions. Yes, great. Remote.
Renata asks, what do you expect implementation of diversity?
I mean, the question was the expectation from diversity. Oh, okay, it's a good question, because when we talk about diversity, there is always some pushback in term, different groups say that we not size fit all in term of the requirements. But at least I think we set the foundation for improving things in term, like we are defining exactly different elements of diversity. It's not just regional or gender, but we went further, like I think 7 or 8 elements of diversity. And we, I think, are also creating this idea that every group need to set goals, and objectives and strategies. So they have to do work. It's not just kind of fluffy words. And also to have that assessment, to have that regular assessment of what they are doing. And so we are creating the situation that we will have metrics and measure. It's not just talk, that we are doing something about diversity and moving from the idea of, you know, they can give you some anecdotes. Oh, we have someone from this country, but, oh, yeah. Can you show us more number and so on? So we are creating situation. Could we do better? Of course we could. But it's hard, you know, it's kind of changing the situation. In terms of implementation, now we will see how things will implement it. Because I think in the subgroup, we took in consideration all this idea that we cannot go further in implementation specifics. We have to be careful about the budget and cost. So we had that in mind, and just we focus on how we can change the whole context about diversity. So, yeah, we expect how what will be proposed in terms of implementation. So, yeah.
All right, thank you. Just out of curiosity, how many of us in the room have heard of these groups that we mentioned already? Can we show hands? Show of hands.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah? You think so, Duffy? Okay, just out of curiosity. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Renata asked, the group had captioning interpretation. Did it help?
Okay, I don't think we need an assessment of that. It helps. I think the captioning helps because even for me when I was chairing the calls, if I missed something, I could double check, and it can be useful to be sure what was said or to get the wording. For interpretation, I think it's more mixed feelings because even we get requests by people and push, we get requests and for people to want, but I don't think we had enough usage of that survey that really justify the request. So, but maybe it helped some people. I cannot state if it was helpful or not. But in general, I think the captioning was clearly something that it will be helpful for any group because even if you are an English speaker or speak the language, you can check or double check what was said exactly. So I think it's much more as a survey that can be helpful for everyone than just like the interpretation that can be hardly justified sometimes if there is not enough people using it.
Thank you, Rafiq. I was just informed that we are way over time. I just wanted to give a chance to Michael to give a small brief about EC North America since he was here. He was actually, yeah, go ahead. You can actually brief yourself.
Well, in quickly, I can't do this quickly. There's so much to discuss. Yeah, so just as the EC North America rep, we've been doing, we've got a few outreach activities coming, most notably at RightsCon, where we're going to be doing a session with some NCUC members, including Jeremy Malcolm, and potentially ICANN staff, people from the GAC and people from the business constituency. I'll talk about the multi-stakeholder model, so that's going to be a very interesting assessment. We're also going to have a booth. If anybody's going to be at RightsCon, please come and let me know, and it would be great to have more people on the booth. And, we're also going to be doing outreach at the INTA, which is a trademark intellectual property event.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael. Also good to note that our AF EC is on the booth upstairs. So if you want to meet her, you can speak to her upstairs. And Louise wanted to join us and say a comment and give you a brief, but she couldn't as her plane just departed. So make sure to get in touch with her. And yes, thank you so much. I would like to thank Maria, Julie, Kevin, and Jose for your support on this call and every single speaker here. Thank you so much.